Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Hello, good afternoon to you, Nobele.
How are you doing?
How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing well, thanks. And how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you so much as well. We are on part 4 of 4, talking about wills and estates. I hope that your day has been good.
Yep, it's been good. It's been good.
Fantastic, man. You know, we've actually had a fantastic conversation with you about wills and estate over the last couple of weeks. And I must thank you so much. Grateful to you for making time to speak to us and, educating us, around this important subject. Now, we conclude this lesson and focusing on trusts. That is a legal entity with a separate, distinct rights, similar to a person or corporation. Now, we are going to be hearing you explain this concept. Now, what would make a trust necessary? And how does it work, actually?
I must say, I'm impressed you've already preempted, because you've already defined what it is. So at this point, I could just hang up, because you clearly know what you're talking about.
Want to hear from a person who actually knows it.
Okay. So like you just said, right, a trust is it's a legal arrangement that allows for assets to be looked after, usually for the benefit of beneficiaries named in a will, right? And I must say that, you know, a trust is not something that you should consider lightly or do on a whim, because there are a lot of rules and regulations that govern trusts. And also, remember, I was speaking about what will happen after you've passed away.
Yeah.
And so there may be many consequences that come out of the existence of a trust that might, you know, can't be rectified because you are gone. So it's one of those decisions that you really have to pause and reflect on and seek good legal advice on. So moving on to why a trust, what are the benefits of a trust? So generally, you typically see trusts where there are assets, a person owns assets, and maybe they have minor children, and they make provision for that these assets, since let's say they anticipate that they could die before the children become of age.
Okay.
They would say, okay, I'm going to create a trust so that the assets are held on behalf of a child and are managed, properly managed well enough, until the child grows up and can manage them for themselves, right? So instead of, you know, just leaving a child who's 16 or 17 to own the family home and do whatever they want to do, you're sort of saying, no, let's step in and put this in a trust that will be managed by someone else who's not that child, and taken care of until such a time that child comes of age. Which could also be that you also, you know, you want your spouse to benefit from the trust, but you want to keep it in the family. So you want your spouse to benefit from the trust until such a time that that spouse passes away, and then it's passed on to the children, right? And you see, in terms of property that's usually in trust, you see usually things that people want to keep in the family. So I gave an example usually of the family home. So maybe this has been passed down from generation to generation, and you don't want someone deciding that this is where it ends and they want to sell the family home. So you would create a trust, put the family home in that trust, such that people can use it, but it's not going to be disposed of. It can't be sold. And then it can also be a way to lessen the inheritance tax payable on someone's estate, because when you transfer a property into a trust, it's now owned by the trust. It's no longer owned by the individual. So obviously the tax, the amount of tax that needs to be paid is less, because it means that the estate of the individual has been lessened as well. So going on to the types of trusts, right? So you typically have like a fixed trust, which is where the beneficiaries have been named and proportions of how much to pay each one. So let's say I have 3 children and I want to put this in a trust. I would say this is so much, my beneficiaries are my 3 children, and I want them to each get 33% in equal share. That's a fixed trust. The terms are fixed.
Okay.
And then you have a discretionary trust, right? Where I'll say I have my 3 children, but my trustees, Let's say my trustee is my sister, but my sister has the power to decide how much to distribute or how to distribute according to the children's circumstances. Because maybe you're making allowance for the fact that, okay, I have three children, but you know their life circumstances might be different later on in life. Maybe someone will be well and fine and doesn't really need much support, but another might be struggling. So you're giving the trustee the power to make an informed decision based on current circumstances to say what is the fair approach to take given the current circumstances. And then you have an interest in possession trust. So this is when I spoke about wanting your spouse to benefit but then pass it on to the children. So in an interest in possession trust, right? You have a beneficiary, such as a spouse, who can use the asset while they are alive, but has to pass it to another beneficiary when they die. And so it's usually done to make sure that, you know, the spouse is provided for, but while keeping the estate intact so that it can pass to the children. So instead of just passing the estate directly to the children, you say until that remaining parent is alive, they will use it and then it will go to the children. And linked to that one, you have an accumulation and maintenance trust. So these are usually for specific things like providing for ongoing expenses for the child. So you would say that this is for living costs and school fees and medical fees, etc. But these ones are very complex because they have very specific reasons for which they can be used. So they have complex rules. So it's usually wise to seek financial advice when establishing those ones. And then the last one, or rather the last common one, is a protective trust. This is where a beneficiary can receive income from the trust, but the capital remains protected. So let's say it's a business, for example, and you have a child, maybe you have one child, and but you don't really, well, let me not put it that way. Let me say maybe your child has some financial issues and could go bankrupt or into, you know, yeah, or insolvent. So you'd say, I want to take care of my child, but I don't want them to own this property because once they own it, should they go bankrupt because of their weird financial, you know, spending, then that house will also be attached to pay for their reckless spending. So I want to keep this in the trust, and they can benefit and receive an income, but they're not going to own it outright.
I'm hearing you talking about that they can access it when you've passed away. Is a trust only accessible on the death of the owner?
Yes, so you can also have a trust fund that takes care of you as the owner whilst you're alive, right? There are some trusts like that where I'm still alive, but I want certain things to be managed by a trust and then take care of my family. But we're not really covering those ones now because, you know, we're speaking in the context of wills and estates. So
I get
when
you. I
preparing for
get
your
you.
death and
I get you.
your the people who remain behind you.
I
But
get
in
you.
terms of, but generally trusts, yes, the intention is this is how I want my property, which I'm not quite willing to, you know, assign or give to one person directly to be managed for the benefit of everyone involved after I'm gone. So it would only be accessible after you're dead, but also, for example, where kids are concerned, if you have a house and you say, I want my child to inherit it when they turn 18, then even if you die when they are 13, for 5 years, that means they're not getting the house. So yes, you've died, but they'll still have to wait for the 5 years until they meet the requirements that the trust say they must meet before they can get the benefit.
Okay, this sounds well and good, but are there any disadvantages to consider when thinking of getting a trust?
I think one that I can think of, right, is because remember that I said a trust is something that you do whilst you're alive, but its effects will take place when you're dead, right? So I think one common one that I can think of is where trust has, because of, you know, you draft it based on your knowledge now, but maybe it hasn't made provision for things looking or turning out to be a completely different way from how you envisioned them, right? So you'd have stipulated that it's only under these circumstances that this and this and that should happen, or so and so should benefit, but circumstances can change, right? And then now, sort of the people who remain behind, their hands are tied because a trust is a legal document. It's binding, and you have to follow the intention of the person who drafted it. So I think that's the main disadvantage. Obviously, there's also the fact that, like I said, it's not a simple thing like a will, where you can just do it willy-nilly. Of course, it's not that willy-nilly, but you need proper professional advice. So there's cost also, if you want to call that a disadvantage. You will incur some costs because even in the drafting, remember how I said you can do it yourself as long as you write it down and you have two witnesses. But a trust, even the documentation that makes the trust valid, needs to be drafted by professionals. So there's also that to consider.
All right. Is it a lot of money to set it up, though, the trust?
It depends really on what the solicitors or the professionals that you're using are going to charge. I mean, for all legal prof techs or financial advice, there's a whole range of types of firms and with different types of fees or range that they have. So it can be reasonable, it can be very expensive. But I must say, not to snub at anyone, but usually, maybe it's because of lack of education, I don't know. You typically see trusts being established by people who are a bit well up. So there's a good chance that even when they are considering who they want to be in charge of drafting the document, because you kind of also want to make sure you're not just, going to a local on street firm and saying draft this for me, because there's consequences that come from it. So usually it's for our well up, and they're probably going to go for a more prestigious, let me call it that, in which case then the fees are high.
Beautiful stuff. Well, Nobubele Amasa, thank you so much for coming through. It's been a fantastic one. Is there perhaps one thing that you want to leave? I mean, this is our last session of this particular series. Perhaps one thing that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Definitely. I do want to say I'm aware that I'm not the first person who's spoken about these things, and I won't be the last person, and AWR is not the last place you'll hear of these things. But generally, as people, we tend to think that things don't apply to us, or maybe and not just yet. Or I think I said this in my first session, that we all kind of, whilst we all recognize that we don't know when we're going to die, we live as if we know when we're going to die, if you get what I'm saying. So it's just an appeal to say, when you've received knowledge, even if it's not about wills and trust, if you've received any advice or any knowledge, especially now in the information age, there's so much information and advice out there. There's so many ways to get educated on anything that you can think of. If you've received any education, any information, and it's something that you reasonably and objectively see could be helpful for you, do the next thing and follow up and do what you can to make sure that you implement what you've learned. So it would be very disappointing, obviously not to me, because I don't know the people who are listening personally, but it would be sad, rather, let me say sad, if you've been with us for 4 weeks, you've heard everything that you've heard, and AWR, it's free, right? So you've gotten all of this for free, and then gone and done nothing about it, and then we won't be there. But then you die and you leave your affairs not taken care of. That would be really sad. And I think, I don't know if stewardship of information is a thing, but I really think people need to think about stewardship on information. Whatever you've been entrusted with, as far as information and knowledge goes, don't just have head knowledge. Take it and do what you can to make sure that you implement whatever it is that you've learned. And also, I think stewardship of information is also about passing it on to the next person.
Oh
So just
yes,
don't
oh
just take it
yes,
for yourself,
oh yes.
do it for yourself. But in your short, maybe you are taking notes or not, or you vaguely remember hearing something, tell someone about it. Tell them that, they can, as a bare minimum, go and find out on the internet and then take it from there. But let's get in the habit of sharing knowledge and, more than that, implementing it in our lives to protect ourselves, protect those who come after us, and generally just make better decisions for ourselves.
Yep. Beautiful stuff. Nobele, thank you so much for joining us for that last couple of weeks. I've definitely made some notes in some of the areas that I think in my life as well I need to take care of. So thank you so much for joining us. It's been a fantastic session.
Thank you so much. I must say thank you also to AWR for the opportunity. God bless the work that you're doing, and may it continue to touch and change lives around the world.
Lovely. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.